on a prayer. And Grove Fairley joins me in the studio. You don't. You have a plan. You're not living on a prayer.
No, I'm going to become a priest. That's my news. I'm taking my vows, my holy orders.
Does that song have significance to you?
Well, that's the song that whenever someone says, do you want to walk on music? I say that because I made such a mess a couple of years ago. I was doing a TV show for, a stand-up TV show for Dave, the channel in the UK.
Yeah.
Where they're just so all over everything. It's like, you know, when you take the mic stand, put it here. And, you know, everything was just planned down to within an inch of its life. And then they said, do you want walk on music? And I was like, living on a prayer. And then I was like, that's actually a terrible idea. But and so many people are like, don't do that. That's stupid, because they'll love the song and they'll want to hear the song. And I was like, oh, I must change that. And literally the day of rehearsal, and then I just walked out and went, I never changed the music. And sure enough,
That was it.
So yeah.
It's a cracking tune. He's a funny guy, actually. His role in 30 Rock was hilarious.
You know, I met John Bon Jovi.
Oh, did you?
I did. In 1993, when I was just a whippersnapper, I was queuing up to meet Niamh Kavanagh, Eurovision winner, to get my single signed.
And he ran into
him instead. And he had played in Dublin the night before. And what had happened was somebody spotted him and they ran to him and knocked me down. Right. So I was on the ground covered in cassette singles, and somebody picked me up, just went, "You okay, man?" And I was like, Yeah, and grand. And then everyone was getting his autograph, and I was like, oh, I should get his autograph.
Who's this guy?
I got his autograph. And it was only afterwards I realized it was actually John Bon Jovi.
So you didn't actually run your hands through his hair. Oh my God, the best.
But he was
hair.
Really tall. He seemed really tall. Maybe I was just really small.
He's aged really well as well. So.
Yeah, he does. He looks well.
We're not here to talk about Bon Jovi now.
Good man.
Home Truths, Smock
Home
Alley.
Home Truths in Smock Alley.
What day is this? Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, the perfect day for comedy.
So tell us about Home Truths.
Well, Home Truths, it started its life as a show in Dublin Fringe.
Yes, I remember that.
Last year before.
Yeah.
And then I just expanded it and made it bigger. And the story of the show is that I quit work to become a full-time comedian and realised that you just have so much time on your hands when you go from two jobs to one job.
Yes.
So it's just about all of the things that I did to
occupy
with all of that time, thinking I was occupying time. So it's a good stand-up show, actually.
Yeah.
I was just talking about it last night because as a comedian, you always want your new show to be better than the last.
Of course.
But that doesn't always happen. And then, thankfully, this is. This is my favourite show I've
What's
written.
What's the
Brilliant.
Connection, though, when you say, is it about Marie Kondo and cleaning up and
yes,
stuff? Because we had the first ever woman who's ever been trained in the how do you say it again?
The KonMari method.
Yeah. She lives in Cork, I think. She was on the show and she's the first ever to be trained.
I want her number. We have to be friends.
Vera, it's all coming back
to
me.
Oh my God.
I know. But for people that don't know, well, people probably do know, it's all over Netflix now. But so did you do that? Did you?
Yeah, that was one of the things that I did because I used to always listen to podcasts and work because I was a programmer. So people don't talk to you. You're just, you know, tap. And I always used to hear these things like, you know, these things that you could do or these trends. And one of them was this book called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up.
Yeah.
And I listened to it on a podcast when I was driving and I thought, I'm going to do that. I have the time to do this stuff now. So I bought the book and I just started to do everything that was in the book.
You have one bowl in your house now.
It's pretty grim, to be honest. Well, I don't know whether I didn't do it properly or whether I made a mess of it, but I gave away all of my CDs and then I spent maybe €200 buying them all back from the charity shop over a period of about 6 months.
Oh, no.
But I did it. And like, there's loads of things in the book that you're supposed to say thank you to the things that you're getting rid of.
There sparks joy and all that stuff.
All of that. And
you're
supposed to dress up. That's an important thing.
Can I tell
it's a
you?
Japanese ceremony.
Yes, and I love all things Japanese, and I've been there twice, and I love it. I love it. I grew up with two girls from Tokyo in Canada as well. Like, I love it. But the first thing I said, all right, let's read about this. And we knew that Vera was coming on the show a few weeks ago, and I was like, okay, so Marie, what she does is she opens all her windows, she lights incense and says a prayer. I didn't do those two steps.
No, that's
but
fine.
I did get dressed, and I was much more productive that day than sitting in my sweats. Honestly.
Yeah, they say that. And I did it, but I think that if you're doing it, you do have to tell the person that you're living with, because I think, I don't know what a nervous breakdown looks like, but I think if you come home and someone's in a penny shirt and tie saying thanks to their books, I think it's like, you probably should have kept that job, girl.
What are you doing? Thank you, plant.
Yeah, so I loved it, but I'm not sure how effective it was.
Okay, so you're not totally following
it now. At the time it was great,
but
like, you know, I am the person that goes to deals and spends £20 on you know, anything you just don't need.
So it's not just the 6th, though, right? You're going to be going to Town Hall in Galway on the 21st. And then April, you're in Glasgow and Edinburgh. Is that the festival?
No. Okay. What I'm doing is I did support for Sarah Millican on tour last year. So I did a week a month for a year. So it was great, but I played to these massive crowds in all of these cities all over the UK, which was incredible to do.
Yeah.
But now it's time to like mop up the Millican cash.
Okay. So
I'm going back to all of the places that I did like a few nights to, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 people.
Right.
I think, well, if I can just get, you know, 1%,
yeah,
I'd be really happy. So, I'm going to be doing that throughout the year. So, those ones are on sale, yeah.
And then you're going to be in Waterford in May and Ballymun, the Axis. Theatre is really lovely, actually, and that's also in May. And then the Island Arts Centre, it's also in May. So Sarah Millican, she's remarkable, isn't she? Like,
she's incredible.
Quite different. She's standout, and I feel like she's also very generous and kind, and does comedy nicely. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, she's absolutely incredible. She's
dirty as well.
She's filthy. She's absolutely brilliantly filthy. And it's so interesting to watch her because she is somebody, actually, I think, that really sticks to that thing of her next show is always better.
Yeah.
But she just, each show keeps getting better. Because I've done support for her now on 3 tours. I just did a handful in the previous ones.
How did that first come around?
Well, I knew Sarah years ago when, like, Sarah used to play the Laughter Lounge here.
Yeah.
And she used to play the International and stuff.
So she didn't forget.
No, she didn't forget. And, like, it's amazing. I always say about Sarah is that some people, when they get famous, they pull the ladder up.
Yeah.
But, like, Sarah just sends down the lift.
Yeah. Come on up.
Everybody, like, play it. Feel what it's like to play a 3,000 seater, you know? She's absolutely amazing, but she destroys gigs. Like, they absolutely go bananas for her, and she sells so many tickets.
And it's kind of, we had Alison Spittle on the show yesterday, I think they have something in common in that they have this kind of innocent, sweet voice, and then what comes out of them is not innocent and sweet.
Well, Alison, I'm devastated that she has gone to London.
Yeah.
Because she was my coffee buddy. We used to meet in Crust.
I'll be your coffee buddy.
Amazing. Done. Sold.
She had the best story yesterday about a squirrel that's tormenting her. So all that's up on a podcast.
Is this the muscly squirrel?
Yes. But it's good, and I love that, like, you know, there's been a lot of problems around comedy in the last few years and what people can and cannot say and certain characters getting into trouble and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But I like hearing the other side of that, which is that you're together as a community and you're working together and you're bringing each other along.
I mean, the sad thing about comedy, I think, in Ireland is that it kind of has fallen apart a little bit in the sense that there's no opportunities anymore.
Right.
You know, that when I started, there was a direct route that you did well in the clubs. Then you got on a TV show, like The Panel was the route. Then it took off, you went into Vicar Street, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And lots of people followed that route. But I think then The Panel got cancelled. And then people realised there was no opportunities, and then the scene kind of froze and everyone got stuck where they were.
Right.
So then a lot of people, mainly my mates, ended up going to London and the US and stuff. Do you
see yourself going anywhere? Are you happy here?
No, like...
Because what you do is a lot of podcasting, and that's, you can do that from here, and you do that very well.
And I make a living, and it's not a brilliant living, but it's a good living. But I've been thinking about it an awful lot because I've always wanted to move, but I'm not sure I'd want to move to do comedy because to me, I think the resilience you need to be a road comic in the UK.
You need to keep going and going.
God,
and going.
That is hard. I've done a little bit of it. Like, it's very different to touring with Sarah, where it's like nice hotels and loveliness. It's different you could be going on stage to 13 hen nights.
Yeah.
You know, at 11 o'clock at night, and you're like, this is not my dream.
I'm not living my dream.
But I think, you know, people like Eleanor Tiernan and Chris Kent, they are, to my mind, they're two of the finest comedians we've ever produced.
Right.
You know, and I think they're going to be huge in the... Well, they are huge. Yeah. They're doing so well.
But we said this with Alison yesterday, so not to kind of repeat, but the fact that you've got, like, Sharon Horgan and Aisling Bea, and, like, they've kind of broken, and then there's, like, my friend... Again, the latter thing, bringing people along. Like, it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, that's the thing about comedy, is that it's such a... It attracts people that love being around people and chatty people, and then it just isolates them because the job is just you're on your own the whole time.
Yeah.
So I think that when you make mates in comedy, like, you really...
You stick to them.
Yeah, you really stick together.
Well, I think it's going to be great. I think it's good. Smock Alley is a wonderful venue.
I love it.
And a lot of cool things happen there. So that is going to be on the 6th, which is Wednesday, at Grove Fairly. And then all the other dates are up on grovefairly.com. And thank you so much for making time to come in on a Sunday morning.
Oh, my pleasure.
Did you
anytime.
Get a coffee at least?
I did.
Thanks, Crow. Thank you.